so,
I'm not going to write everything, it's too much work, but I basically used the old who, what, when, where, and why. As a means to focus on our subject matter. After all, Yamuna Acharya is saying that everything in the material world is limited by a time, a place, a space. Obviously, personalities are there. So in this way, I'm creating a lens on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so in looking at who, we may as well go to that side. Obviously Lord Chaitanya, and obviously his associates are the ones we're talking about. And that's not the only personalities that are found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because there are also encounters with other sampradayas. We find that Lord Chaitanya goes to South India, meets with the Tattvavadi Acharyas, that means Madhava Acharyas Sampradaya. He also goes and stays in Sri Rangam for 4 months during the rainy season, and that time meets with a representative, a prominent personality in the Sri Sampradaya. So there's also encounters, I'll just write other Sampradayas. And there's also encounters. We find that the whole thing takes place, the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in a Muslim-occupied India. So there's plenty of, here and there in the book, we find Islam appearing in the form of the Nawab Hussein Shah, or the Chand Qazi, or other such personalities. I forgot about the Buddhists, right? There was when Lord Chaitanya was successful in preaching, at one point there was a Buddhist acharya who wanted to pollute Lord Chaitanya, and he sent one of his disciples with an offering and a big plate and nice arrangement of foodstuffs, but all the contaminated items mixed in, right? To contaminate his consciousness, that was the idea. So as this disciple was walking with the tray towards Lord Chaitanya, this huge eagle just appeared in the sky, grabbed the plate, all the foodstuffs fell on the ground, and the plate landed plunk on the head of the Buddhist teacher or guru, which of course made him lose consciousness. And so then all the disciples stood around their guru in great anxiety and said, what to do, what to do? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, chant Hare Krishna. So they all, about 30 of them, chanted Hare Krishna in his ears. The Buddhist teacher came back to his senses, and in that way, in a way, he was initiated by his disciples as a Vaishnava. Okay, so there are also encounters with other religions. And, the government is there. The government is present, especially because, of course, Rupa and Sanatan were part of that government.
There's a section dealing with
the government. Well, that's some things that I jotted down as who is being discussed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, let's see what's next. What? Very good. Go to the other side. So in the course of the week, you know, like I wanted to touch upon some of these things, and I wrote there Lord Chaitanya because I could even get it in, I think, because after all, that is our perspective. Obviously, outsiders when they're looking at the Chaitanya Charitamrita are not going to accept the divinity of Lord Chaitanya. They're going to question it. And we, of course, are studying it as insiders. We're not going to have a really dry academic session and dice and slice the whole CC as it would be perceived by academics. We're going to have like a devotional session which is sensitive to academics. There's a difference between the two. We are here solidifying our point of view. We are not like going to try and understand per se what are all the different views out there. We're looking at our point of view to strengthen it, both for ourselves as well as in presenting ourselves to others. Some years ago, I also did hear a presentation on the CC, and at that time, I had a slideshow. Still have it somewhere. I might still show it to you later on. But I started with this slideshow, and the title of the slideshow was In Search of Identity. Yeah, In Search of Our Identity. No. Ah, sorry. I'm making a pass. cold feet, which is not a good idea. I have to keep my balance. Okay. Where the Chaitanya Charitamrita provides us with our identity, that's what it means. The idea is that, if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, you have personalities like Bhishma, who is stronger than 10,000 elephants. I mean, you know, makes Spider-Man looks like a wimp, you know? Bhishma Dev, right? Hundreds of arrows, pierced from head to toe, still alive and calm. By then, you don't need to... I mean, by then, most people would be screaming louder in the ambulance, you know. I mean, it's inconceivable. They are, in one sense, superhuman. Yeah. Arjuna ascends to the heavenly planets and, you know, has meetings with the demigods as if they're just around the corner, you know. So, it's another universe, another world. They have another level of strength. And still, many of the principles that apply to the Pandavas, of course, apply to us. But still, in some ways, they were very different. They were kings, they were kshatriyas, and so on. When you come to the CC, You come to a world of devotees that is more, similar to us, of course, you know. No t-shirts, yeah, and a few other things were not there. But, you know what I mean. But, okay, they were brahmacharis, grihasthas, sannyasis, and vanaprasthas like we know them, you know what I mean? They were, even the dotis were sort of the same, and they were mostly common people living in common houses, and, you know, not kings and all that. So, and they were chanting Hare Krishna as the main process for their self-realization. So, in the CC, we find an identity as sadhakas, you know, like as what we are, as practitioners. Also, we see the interaction amongst them, how they are behaving with each other. So, in that way, the CC provides us reasonable role models and prototypes of personalities that we can sort of look up to and as ideal examples. More so than the Bhagavatam. It's closer to us than the Bhagavatam, one might say. Furthermore, the CC is not only providing us the teachings that of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not only providing us the teaching which is found in the Bhagavatam, where it is stated that Sankirtan Jagamangalam Annasam, that through this process of Sankirtan, the whole universe will become auspicious. Yes, so that's all there. But the CC has that element of mercy added, that element of where we fall short, Lord Chaitanya's mercy kicks in. And that, of course, on the strength of that, we can attempt, you know, we can attempt to be devotees, otherwise we can possibly forget it. It would be too much, too austere, too difficult, and so on. So this mercy element is very important. Okay, so in this way, the CC is where we find our identity, and then by following that process, we come to our eternal identity. Prabhupada also says, he says it's for the CC that we are different, that our Sampradaya has an identity. Because, after all, Bhagavad Gita, all the Vaishnava groups are claiming Bhagavad Gita. And even impersonalists are quoting Bhagavad Gita. So we cannot say that Bhagavad Gita is our book exclusively. That we cannot say. Even Srimad Bhagavatam, Madhavacharya, for example, the other Sampradayas have been commenting on it, and again, some Mayavadis have commented on it. Even Bhagavatam, we cannot say that it is exclusively our book, although we put the emphasis on the Bhagavatam. Whereas in other Sampradayas, they may put the emphasis on other books, like Vishnu Purana, for example. But okay, for us it's the Bhagavatam. But it's not exclusively our identity or our book. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you know, that's who we are. And what is it? Who are you? You know what I mean? What are you guys all about? And, okay, boom, here it is, the CC. See you later. Let them read it. Yes? And because it's all there, basically, who we are. The interesting thing is that most members of ISKCON today have not read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's also interesting because that's the book which really provides us with our identity, and we haven't read it.
Which makes me suspect that we don't really know who we are. We kind of, as a movement, have an identity crisis.
Possibly so, if we have no idea what the CC is about. That's why I became really fired up about this topic, because I felt that it's like at the core of our movement. Sometimes I think that Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, in presenting Krishna consciousness to the Western world, went about it a little bit different than the institution that he came from. In the sense that the Gaudiya Mutt is very Chaitanya-centered. It's like for the Gaudiya Mutt in India, Chaitanya, Mayapur, that's the big focus, always, everywhere. Even in Vrindavan, you know, we'll see Mahaprabhu. If you go, a few years ago, I did a tour of Bangladesh as part of my field research and went to all the places related to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bangladesh. And the thing that was there, amongst the Vaishnavas, which are many, there are already like 15,000 initiated ISKCON devotees, and then there are Gaudiya Mutt and so many others. So there are many devotees, and just Panchatattva, the entire Panchatattva was so present. I mean, even on the birthplace of Jagannath Misra, the government of all, a Muslim government, was maintaining the huge temple project. And there were also deities of Panchatattva and so on. And it was a lot cleaner than many places in India, which are not always maintained so well. So anyway, in Bengal, we have this mood of Lord Chaitanya. But when Prabhupada came preaching to the West, he put Krishna up front. He spoke about Krishna, because Krishna, after all, is the God of hundreds and millions, of Hindus who are accepting Krishna in some way or other. He is like the known, the non-controversial personality of Godhead. Whereas when you speak about Lord Chaitanya, in the most have never heard of him, right? And those who have heard of him think he is some sort of mystic, a great devotee, extraordinary by all means, but then there is a much smaller percentage that will accept him as God. Right? Of course, history has it recorded, and now I'm speaking, historians have recorded that even during his lifetime, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was being worshipped as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in Orissa, for example, we find references that there were temples. There were temples of Lord Chaitanya, where his deity form was worshipped during his lifetime, already in Orissa. His divinity was spreading and was being accepted, but it still. So, Prabhupada first established Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and of course came behind it with Lord Chaitanya. But in a sense, it is our duty, and it is our true position, as in this age where Lord Chaitanya is the Yuga Avatar. So that means the Yuga Avatar basically means that the whole process of self-realization is predominated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means that basically we are Everything we do is connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, sooner or later, and as our movement is growing in authority and popularity, sooner or later, we will more and more start to make the point about Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. Therefore, that temple in Mayapur was so important in Prabhupada's mind, and that's why it's being built now, to draw the attention of the whole world to Lord Chaitanya. So we can see that it's all part of the thing. So within the scope of all that, maybe it's time to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That may be a good start. Even sooner or later, people are going to ask us, maybe 5 years from now, they hope to finish the temple in Mayapur, and people are going to ask you, what's it all about? And we quickly Google and Wikipedia and all together and come up with some waffle, right, as who Lord Chaitanya is, but that's a little shallow. And we're going to need something more. So, with that, your college education would be incomplete if you are studying, let's say, Western philosophers, you're studying basically what people out there think, so that we can connect better to them. But if we wouldn't spend our time in penetrating deeper into our own identity, we would miss out really the essence of it all, which is. So, although my course is of course, first of all, it's not the only one. Krishna Kshetra is also every year doing a course on the CC. Then, of course, you're studying many other aspects of our corpus, but nonetheless, the CC is important, and part of what I want to impress upon you is that you should take note of that, and then incorporate it into your outlook, your life, your modus operandi, and so on. Okay, that was the first speech. Now we scribble a little more about what. And what we had, well, I said we had. What's the book about? It's obviously about Sankirtan. And the Sankirtan is both a process and a movement. So we have sometimes discussions about chanting Hare Krishna and what happens, and Lord Chaitanya gets the order of his spiritual master to chant Hare Krishna, and he's saying that he is, as a result of following this order of his spiritual master to chant, he's gone mad. Right? So the purports explain that if one has a problem, then one must indeed immediately present it before the spiritual master. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to his spiritual master and said, this chanting has made me mad. The spiritual master immediately begins to show ecstatic symptoms and some signs of madness himself, and says, you are very fortunate. You're very fortunate. This is very good. So the process of the chanting is described several times throughout the book, and later I'll focus on it and take some sections and where the chanting of Hare Krishna is described in the CC. What we're doing now is just creating a frame of reference, really, like of the CC. Okay, so another What else is the CC about? Another big topic in the CC, the central topic, really,
yes, in the CC, is the reason why it was, why Lord Chaitanya is so extraordinary.
In the beginning, you get like a philosophical section, you get like an explanation, or you get 14 introductory verses, then you get like an explanation of the Panchatattva, and then you get like an elaborate description of the Bhakti Kalpataru, how the branches are spreading all over, and not only how it's spreading, but also which ones are sort of in and which are out. By writing that chapter, Krishna's Kaviraj just put a fence around the movement. If you're not mentioned there, you're not important, that's for sure. Yeah? Everybody important has been mentioned. He says there are others, but he clearly mentioned anybody important. So if you're not there, sorry, you know, we're not going to take you very serious. Anyway, and then starts actually the story. Right? After this whole Chaitanya tree, and that takes up to 12 chapters, you know, of the Adi Lila. Then in chapter 13, we start with the advent of Lord Chaitanya, going up to chapter 17, ending the Adi Lila, where he defeats the Chandkasi. Not the Chandkasi, sorry, the case of Kashmiri Pandit. Yes? So, this whole description in those chapters, and those five chapters, there's a lot of emphasis on miracles. Lots of miracles. Already when Sachidevi was expecting and the child was in the womb, then, you know, she saw all these celestial beings in the house, and strangers were coming to visit, and so on, and, you know, clearly the demigods, they knew. Yeah. There are many such things. When Nimai, immediately after his birth, when he's still sort of lying down, then as a child, they hear these tinkling ankle bells, yeah, as if, you know, as if someone is running fast, footsteps also, of a child running fast. But it can't be like Nimai, because Nimai is only a baby and not walking yet. Right? So, you know, Jagannath Misra is thinking about it and finally comes to the conclusion, it's the Shalik of Shiva. That's perfectly logical. that clears the whole matter. Right? So, but we see that there's a lot of these miracles. And you can look at all the miracles in Lord Chaitanya's life and make a list that I did. And believe it or not, I have a PowerPoint which shows that. Oh. But, you know, oh, there ain't no power. So, whatever may be, the list, for example, as a child, Nimai gets kidnapped, and the thieves carry him away, and somehow or other they run away carrying the child, and in the course of running, they wind up again in front of the door of Jagannath Misra's house. And everyone says, oh, there is the lost child, there he is, oh, thank you so much for bringing him back. And they just take him out of there, out of the arms of the thieves, and that's it. Okay, there's lots of stories. We remember Jalikanda. So miracles plenty throughout the CC. And these miracles are definitely attributing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's identity as the Supreme Lord, to his divinity. But that's not the main miracle. The main miracle is that he displays this love of God. A level of love of God nobody has ever seen. That is the miracle of the CC. Yeah. And that is the main topic of the CC. that miracle of love of God. All the other stuff is preliminary, is external. That we're establishing Him as the Supreme Lord. All right, Supreme Lord, yes, done. Okay, what we really want to discuss, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami as the writer, after he's dismissed all the, like, in the second chapter, he is establishing that we're dealing with the Supreme Lord. And he gives different arguments, and he's first establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Lord on a verse of Bhagavatam. And at one point after his arguments, he says, so, now I have silenced all the counter-arguments, finished. There's no more discussion. So basically, Krishna's Kaviraj is just setting preliminaries. But when he begins to write, he is really writing about Krishna praying. Now, in the Adi Lila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is living with his family, and only at the very end is he beginning to show an identity as a devotee. And it is like, we know that that was also like for a very short time, maybe 1.5 years of his period that he stayed in Navadvip. Out of the 24 years, maybe 1.5 years was the time that he was a devotee. And so that is hardly described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Very short, in chapter 17, a little bit. Most of chapter 17, which is the last chapter of Adi Lila, is about defeating the case of Kashmiri Pandit. And then after that, there's a little bit, there's giving a short description. And that's basically when he becomes a devotee. And then he's a devotee, and then he's immediately, very quickly, an ecstatic devotee. Yeah? And then one day, in his ecstasy, he sits there and he's chanting, Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. Then some of those Nyaya fellows, one of those Nyaya fellows is a whole bunch of them, are just, they already had a problem with this arrogant Nimai Pandit who always knew everything better. So they, and then he was sitting chanting, Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. Now that's off. That's totally off. I mean, how would any of us, imagine, there's one person in the room here, we don't know who tomorrow morning will suddenly be sitting at Japa time, Gopi, 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 Gopi. I mean, how would we respond, I mean, it's really tough, these things. I have experience in one temple, it was a small temple, so we're all walking in circles around Tulsi Chenodak in the Argus. And there's this one person, he's not chanting, he's sitting like this. So after about 10 minutes, I couldn't take it anymore. So I go, what are you doing? So, balancing my chakras. Oh my God, Give us a break. Chakras in Japa time. So you can see when there's a slight deviation, for us it's also hard to swallow. So just in the light of that, you can imagine, how these devotees felt, these Brahmana boys, and here he sits, Nimai, the great scholar, Gopi, 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 chanting Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. So then they got in his case, and said, like, hey, what you doing, I mean, you should be chanting the name of Krishna. And Nimai, at that point, was just in a mood. He was just in a mood of being upset. So, upset with Krishna. Who is unfaithful and so on, as the gopis sometimes go. So
Gopi, Gopi, Gopi being in that mood of mind. So when they said Krishna, he became very angry. And he just chased them. And said, get out of here, I don't want to hear that name Krishna. And he chased them. Yeah? So that's where, that's about leading up to his taking sannyas. Then that becomes a whole thing between the two, and then between the two groups, and then he begins to think that maybe he should take sannyas, that these logicians are making offenses and therefore cannot get the mercy and go to this heart. So the Adi Leela, in the Adi Leela, Lord Chaitanya is a devotee only for a very short time, basically. And the love of God, whatever is there, it's not described very much in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a lot of it in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. There he falls unconscious from time to time. There even it gets so bad that they think he's gone mad. And they put him in a barrel of oil. Right? Yeah, there's just this soaking in oil. Yeah, to bring down the vata, you can try. dip the person, and then things on the head, of course, cooling the head with chandan oil, all kinds of things. But up to the neck in a barrel of oil, the head. That's Chaitanya Bhagavat. But not much there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then he takes sannyas. And the sannyas ceremony is also not described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's Chaitanya Bhagavat. But basically, after that, the love of God's coming out. And then the love of God, as it's coming out, it's just ecstasy. And he's just overwhelmed. The freedom that now he's a sannyasi, now that he can just be completely into it and openly worship Krishna at last. So it all bursts out. And it's contagious. Anybody who's in his association also gets swept up in the same mood. And that's like, you know, as he goes through South India, whole villages come out and they just start to dance with him, and people just become ecstatic, and then they go back to their village and then the whole village becomes ecstatic. And it's all about worship of the Supreme Lord, but there may not be always the deepest, the complete philosophical understanding amongst the people. But they become uplifted by that association. So, in the beginning, the love of God is kind of showing quantitatively like that. You know, it's overwhelming, it's amazing. But only as he goes in the Madhya Lila, then he goes deeper into South India doing his tour. And then there are certain philosophical discussions with some of the members of the other sampradayas, and in these philosophical discussions, it's singled down on Krishna. That it's about Krishna, not about Vishnu, not about any other form, Lakshmi Narayan. No, it's about Krishna and his Vrindavan pastimes. And a discussion comes up with Venkatabhata in Sri Rangam about Lakshmi Narayan. And, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking Venkatabhata, great scholar of the Sri Sampradaya. He's asking, he says, you know, is it a fact that your Lakshmi Devi is considered to be the most chaste? Oh, yes. Venkatabhata goes into a whole discussion. Yes, she is always dedicated to the feet, the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, her eternal husband. Oh yes. Never ever for a moment is she not serving the feet of her husband. Yes, Pada Sevana Lakshmi. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, then how is it? Huh? How is it that Lakshmi Devi performed austerities to enter into the pastimes of Krishna? So Venkatabhata is sort of giving a look from naughty question. Right? Are you suggesting that Lakshmi is not chaste? Right? He says, no, they're the same. They're the same. And but then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back and says, yes, if okay, the same Supreme Lord, but still, then why wasn't she satisfied just serving the lotus feet of Narayana? And why did she also want to enter into the pastimes of Krishna? And then, after performing her austerities, why couldn't she enter into those pastimes of Krishna? That comes next. So yeah, well then there is a silence, and it's like, well, you know, those are the mysterious ways of the Supreme Lord. So there, he has no answer, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then provides the answer and explains how the Aishwarya, Lakshmi Devi is worshipping the Supreme Lord in awe and reverence, being always aware of his divine position, and therefore offering him the greatest opulence in exchange for his unlimited opulence. But you know, with Krishna, obviously it's a different mood. It's not about, it's about offering one's heart, offering oneself, offering oneself in complete, in such a, with such an eagerness that virtually speaking, nothing else matters anymore. So, all right, in that discussion with Venkatavata, we can see that the qualitatively, the praying becomes a little bit more defined. So it goes on like that. It goes on like that. We get to see later, in the just before going back to Puri, after completing the whole tour of South India, the last stop is with Ramananda Rai. And then you get like with Ramananda Rai, you go to the whole theoretical discussion of love of God. And it comes to different levels. First, yet kurusi, yet pasnasi, yet juhusi, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give away in charity, whatever austerity you perform, all these things, you do it as an offering to me. Yeah. That's external. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. That's external. And then it comes through the whole five rasas, dasya, all the way up to madhurya, as being topmost. And then it gets into there also, in more defined, refined descriptions of it within madhurya, different moods. Radharani, of course, embodying topmost mood. So, you know, like then we have a whole theory right there. And then Lord Chaitanya walks into Jagannath Puri, and shortly after that, all the devotees from Bengal start arriving and it's getting ready for Rath Yatra. And then he gets a big Rath Yatra, and it's not like a big preaching event like our Rath Yatras, you know, a big Rath Yatra, you know, give out the mercy to so many people, and, you know, how many plates of prasad, you know. No. It's Lord Chaitanya is ecstatic, he's jumping higher than anybody, and Lord Chaitanya is, while he's pulling the chariot of Jagannath, just getting totally ecstatic, and at one point all he can say is Jagga, 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 Jagga. And he also repeats a verse which is more or less saying, where are those moonlit nights of Chaitra? You know, his focus is on Vrindavan, and he's in the mood of Radharani and the gopis bringing Krishna back from Kurukshetra to Vrindavan. So he's living out the internal experience, which is
viraha bhav, or love God in separation.
So by that time, you know, we have seen in the Madhya Lila a first display of love of God, then we have just the ecstasy, then we get it qualified, then we see the separation comes in to make it more complete, as like now it gets the most intense. And then after that, there are some Vrindavan experiences and so on. And then soon we come to, and then we begin to philosophically digest it. Because from chapter 19 to 25, the last portion of the Madhya Lila, we are describing teachings to Rupa Goswami, teachings to Sanatana Goswami, and also the last chapter, we defeat the Mayavadis one more time. We do that, Krishna Das uses these Mayavadi, this Banaras pastime, two times in the book, out of context. You know, out of chronology, he puts it in a different position. So, in short, you know, you can see that the Madhya Lila begins to qualify that love of God, and in the Antya Lila that continues. And there are also ample of warnings for the unqualified devotees about Sada achar or Vaishnava behavior in the Antya Lila. In many pastimes, that topic comes up also. So just what he does, Krishna Kaviraj, he takes it up, all you know, really into Krishna praying, and gets like really into it, and then he takes it back down to prescribe duty for a Vaishnava, how a Vaishnava should behave, what a Vaishnava should do, just to make sure to keep the sahajism out. And then again, he takes it up into descriptions of love of God. And then a little more sadhachar, like this Antya Lila is closing. Right? So that gives you an idea in a bird flight of what we are looking at the CC. So you can see that in that context, love of God, right, is the principal topic. I hope that after my explanation you sort of can see that now. Yeah, if anyone has questions, comments in between, don't be shy. It's allowed. And if you're interrupting me, I'll tell you to hold your horses. Or, you know, or keep your monkeys on the ground. Yes.
You were saying how in the beginning the love God is showed in a quantitative way, in a sense of big sanghita movement and everything. But what I understood that you were suggesting and you didn't say it was that later on in the Antya Lila is shown more in a qualitative way. In other words,
even
it's
in Madhya Lila, the Madhya Lila already. You know, it's in Antya Lila you get more qualitative descriptions. The first chapter shows that they begin to look at Rupa Goswami's writings, who's the Rasa Acharya, who wrote to Vidakta Madhava a play. And Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Raya, and Sarupa Damodar are looking at it. And the Vidakta Madhava is not like a book which describes so much intimate dealings in the sense of like embracing and these things between Krishna and the gopis, but it's more about sentiments, it's more about internal sentiments. So the internal sentiments of Srimati Radharani are being analyzed there in the Vidakta Madhava. And of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is following in these sentiments. So therefore yes, in the Antya Lila, we still go deeper into these matters of Krishna praying. So, once again, the principal topic of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is to describe that amazing Krishna praying. Okay. And of course, how should Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing it.
But it is very much describing it, what it is. What is he distributing?
No Mahavanya Krishna Pedra Krishna Chaitanya Guru Tushima Maha. Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful incarnation who is freely distributing the love of God, which has never distributed before. Have you also memorized it? Yeah, hope so. Well, that is very nice.
But the CC is like bringing that verse, this is bringing like depth to that verse. Okay. So, we may as well, if we find the pen, we do, write down Krishna Prem. 1, 2, 3. Good. Yeah, what else is there in the CC? The CC, you know, it's interesting because I had a discussion yesterday with Lucas Sanatan, the head of our Dutch PBT and also a bit of Africa. And we were talking about a Dutch translation of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And, you know, if you look at the English version, you will see that it says Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then as a subtitle, Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Right? So it's going like pastimes, pastimes, pastimes. How in the world are you going to translate pastimes in Dutch? Is it impossible? You don't have one word for pastimes, and, you know, you can maybe in a few words, but it's just like, he says, I think of calling it the biography. And changes. The editor is making changes. All right, I'm turning it now. Pull him over. Yeah. Yeah, the internet's full. Grab the chair, pal. Get in, chair. He'll be all right. Yeah, so it's yeah, where was it going with this? Yes. So oftentimes the CC is thought of as a book of pastimes, right? Nice stories. Lord Chaitanya Charitamrita in the forest. Head on the tiger, feet on the tiger, the deer. Tiger and deer are embracing, kissing. Pretty far out. So these are exciting stories, that everyone likes to read about. Very nice. So in this way, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is oftentimes looked at as like a storybook. Nice storybook. But of course it's a lot more.
Spoke about changes, bibliography.
I beg your pardon?
You spoke about changes.
Oh yeah, I'm not lost. No, not lost. I'm saying because I was just thinking. I was thinking of Tony Stewart, and I thought, shall I pull him in now or shall I pull him in later? I may as well pull him in a little bit now and more later. So, the academics have also studied, obviously, our tradition, and there are different, that has started quite early with a number of Bengali scholars, you know, D.C. Sen, S.K. Day, early Indologists, who sort of have tried to map out the territory, but it's kind of not so refined scholarship. It's just really like chalking it out, sketching, oftentimes many details wrong, but some sketching. And then you get like scholarship of biased, strong Christian English scholarship, you know, look at our movement and as like superstitious and this and that. And there's lots of books like that, right, for a whole period. So they're not so interesting. But then When we come to Western scholarship, of course, we have a Harvard edition of the CC, and Harvard is, of course, together with Oxford, these are the number one educational institutions in the world. So that's still stands, done by Dimmock. Dimmock's student and Sanskrit editor was Tony Stewart, and his disciple, or his student, is Rebecca Menring. Three generations of scholars, and they're all studying our tradition and writing books about it. And Tony Stewart, well, Dimmock translated the CC and wrote a huge introduction and a lot of biographical details in the introduction. With some remarkable points, we'll come back to that. And Tony Stewart wrote a book about the CC, a critical edition of the CC. So critical edition means gone through, diced and sliced the text, looked at it very carefully. It's supposed to stand in academic circles for a long, long time. And he called it the final word. Well, that wasn't, the academics didn't like that. They don't like that kind of phrase is not very popular in the academic world. So many scholars are the final word. What kind of title is that? Who does Tony Stewart think he is? But I tend to think that there's a lot of rubbish in the book of Tony Stewart, and we'll come back to that. That's awful. Because he tends to see Krishnadas Kaviraj as like part of a group of Vrindavan Goswamis who are trying to politically establish their supremacy over all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and the CC is a book written driven by political motives. So that's a lot of rubbish, obviously. So for that I don't appreciate the book too much. But the title, the final word, right? Basically, Stewart's point is that Krishnadas Kaviraj has taken all the essential elements of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, his personal teachings, then of the theology of the Goswamis, who are his disciples. And in that way he's captured like the whole corpus of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings embodies. And no one who claims any connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had anywhere near anything as sophisticated as a Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami had. And therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj, his book, became the universally accepted book. And there are, in Bengal, there are Chaitanya Charitamrita temples. Just a temple where the CC is on the altar. There, well, I don't know if they read it, but for sure enough, they're worshipping it. No, there are temples where they worship the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's how prominent the Chaitanya Charitamrita has become. It has become the predominant authoritative book on Lord Chaitanya. And it includes, therefore, not only pastimes, right? It includes also, well, two things, ontology and theology. Oops. Yeah, the projector is not here, so we gotta do it with chalk and board, you know. Like our ancestors. Ontology, the nature of being. Yeah, that's what ontology means, nature of being. The nature of the being of God. Right? That's what it's like. So the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita gets into it, you know, like completely into how the Lord manifests in all these different incarnations and so on. And if you look at like what Prabhupada did when he summarized the Chaitanya Charitamrita, first, before writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada wrote the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And as he's writing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, what he did is like he left out 90% of the pastimes. And he just like zoomed in on the ontology and the theology. And he just like does this whole thing about elaborate thing on all the avatars, you know, guna avatars, lila avatars, so many avatars, right? Like, so it's interesting. So the ontology means Krishna and all his expansions and energies and everything, the nature of his being. Okay, that's very much part of the CC, much more so than in the autobiographies. Chaitanya Bhagavat, you won't find that. You don't. Chaitanya Bhagavat, a lot of ecstatic pastimes, very kind of, described in a lyric, in a very ornate way, emotional way, very rich descriptions, and you read it all, Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's like, wow, and it's ecstasy, and then it's lots of supernatural experiences, and just overwhelming things. The Murari Gupta's diary, which is the basis of all the biographies, which was written before Chaitanya Bhagavat, is a little more sober. Murari Gupta's diary is dealing with Navadvip and then stops. After. So that deals with up to 1486 to 1510, 24 years. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas after 24 years, so
1486 plus 24 means 1510, if you can do the calculation.
So in 1510, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and Navadvip stopped to a dead halt, just nothing going on. Right? So Murari Gupta wrote, it is said he started writing his diary right then. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, writing that diary kept him alive. And otherwise, you know, he had nothing to live for. But writing it all down was reliving the whole thing and staying alive. Right? Otherwise, he might as well have died. So Murari Gupta started to write the diary. And in Murari Gupta's diary, one thing that is interesting, he puts like in the first chapters quite some interesting detail on the elders. So he describes quite a bit about who was there before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how they were there, how they all started to settle in Navadvip, and how they were all devotees, and they were all eternal associates of the Supreme Lord, but they had sort of forgotten their eternal identity at that stage. And also amongst each other, they didn't know the eternal identity of each other, but they felt naturally attracted to each other. So they had friendship bonds, naturally. But their eternal identity was temporarily covered. Alright, he describes it like that. But you don't find much or lengthy philosophical, analytical passages in any of these biographies. Also not in Chaitanya Charitamrita or other biographies, which we'll mention all later. So, ontology is there, theology, the teachings of the Goswamis, about the process, about how you actually come to perfection. So the nature of being and really the teachings of how to attain the state of perfection. Really. Then what else is there, and that's interesting maybe also, is history.
Yeah. There's history. There's all kinds of historical details. Yeah. Well, you know, so this is where we meet oftentimes academics who are like historians. Yeah. And some of these historians, like there's a famous historian in Orissa known as Prabhat Mukherjee. And Prabhat Mukherjee is very respected, and he wrote a book, The History of Chaitanya Faith in Orissa. And it's like a filling from someone's tooth. Not mine. The History of Chaitanya Faith in Orissa. And he does a good job. Prabhat Mukherjee was also part of a team from Germany under Kulke, Hermann Kulke, which went in Orissa for 10 years. And the whole team, they just were mapping out Orissa. And they had a lot of interesting work they did. For example, they looked at the Madala Panji. And the Madala Panji, these are the records of the Jagannath Temple, which are these palm leaves kept in tubes, metal tubes. And, you know, also the time of Lord Chaitanya was recorded. Unfortunately, most of those tubes were containing powder. The days that was lost. But something is there. It's not that the whole Madala Panji has actually been photographed and been analyzed and, you know, been digitalized, and no university has so far archived the whole Madala Panji. So something might still come out from the Madala. Anyway, so Prabhat Mukherjee, who is a good historian, and I'll use some of his work later on, but in his book, Danny, at one point he goes like, yeah, you know, yeah, the Chaitanya Charita I'm reading, it's not historical. It's not all historical. Right? He goes in a whole tantrum, you know, the historian, it's not historical. He gets hysterical that it's not historical about various details. The historicity, as it's called, or the historicity means how much actually is the CC historically correct. That's an important point to look at. You know, I was looking at studies of Islam. And there, you know, it's mentioned. The main thing is that the Quran is taken 100% literal. Whatever is there, that's it. Right? And those who dare to question it are sort of like on the verge of becoming non-believers, and you know, they never meet a good end. That way. So, what is our view? Are we also such literalists? Yeah. Are we also such... Are we taking also every word in Prabhupada's books, yeah, as completely factual, even historic points? Yeah. Because there are many historic points. Yeah. Mention. Are we going to take all those also absolutely as factual? Purport to Adivila 1089, it gives dates, right? A whole bunch of dates. The date that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back from Puri to Bengal to meet Rupa and Sanatan, supposedly to meet there. Others say it was a year later. Others say it was much later. Yeah. What are you going to say?
Well, in this book, that's it. Our book is
says, and anybody who doesn't believe it will rot forever in hell. Is that our conviction, or are we a little flexible on historical details? If we are flexible on historical details, in the Krishna Samhita of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he takes this strategy, and he speaks about the Bhagavatam, and he says, for argument's sake, let us say that all the historical facts of the Bhagavatam are only secondary, and that really that they are the material aspect of the Bhagavatam, for argument's sake, and that they can be debated. And then you have the philosophical aspect of the Bhagavatam, and that is absolute. Yeah? He argues in the Krishna Samhita. Of course, if you study the Krishna Samhita very carefully, you'll see that he says, as a means of strategy. Yeah? Okay, he used it as a strategy to present like that. Not that he believed that. But many have... There is something called Adunikavad, right, which sums that up. That has been phrased by Sukhavak. Adunikavad is then... the concept that maybe the philosophical parts of the book are true and the historical parts are not true. Well, slippery ice, obviously. Slippery ice. The history. So we'll look a little bit more at the history of our in the CC in this week. A bit. Yeah, in the end, what are we going to present, Who are we going to go with? What else are we dealing with in the CC is texts and... Oops, that was wrong. Anyway, purports. There's a lot of things that I also wrote in my PowerPoint, which I'm not writing because the board's too small. But when we're looking at the text, we also look at statistics. For example, today is just introductory talk, and we're just bouncing some things off you so that you get a sense of orientation. So here we go. 11,500 verses. Compare that with the Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, or Bhagavad Gita, 700 verses. Then you're looking at a substantial work. Looking at the Bhagavatam, you have over 8,000 purports in the Bhagavatam. Whereas in the CC, you have 2,500. Yeah? So the percentage is much lower. Yeah? It's maybe, let's say, roughly 20%, whereas in the CC, it's like, 40%, over 40%. Yeah? So just an idea that there are a lot more purports in the Bhagavatam than in the CC. Actually, yeah. So that's also the way the book's made up. That, of course, the purports are these purports are not always appreciated. Oftentimes, they are seen as not directly explaining the text, and people are trying to point at Bhaktivedanta Swami and put him in a box. Right? But of course, these are not the purports of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. These are the purports based on the commentary of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and mostly Prabhupada draws his information from there. He draws some from the Amrita Prabaha Bhasya, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Basically every chapter has chapter summaries from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Amrita Prabaha Bhasya, and good ones, and also with that, authoritative ones. So each chapter summary is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking. It's not just, you know, a BBT group has made a chapter summary to their summary. No, it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So sometimes on some point he highlights there the Anubhasya commentary from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then, you know, you look at, yeah, obviously that makes it very, very solid scholarship. Yeah? We cannot question the scholarship of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Not that we're going to question the scholarship of Prabhupada either, but you know, still, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is the scholar, obviously. The living encyclopedia. So that must be noted. The purports are not just Prabhupada alone. You know, that he is very faithful and loyal to his spiritual master, and he's not trying to be so original. He's not trying. He's, where it's not necessary, he will not add his own comments. He'll just give it as it is. Many times. So that's an important observation. We'll get into the statistics. Okay, you know, like, so I can summarize the statistics maybe for you. We'll go to the five. No one told me what time is. I'm just going to the five. Huh?
Today.
And tomorrow we're going from 10 till, or 10, huh?
10 to 1.
10 to 1, huh?
If you want to.
Yeah. Okay, if I get a projector.
Yes, okay.
Huh?
Yes.
Thanks.
If I don't get a projector, then I'm not coming. I actually want two projectors, but I'll work with one.
But I'm happy with two flipboards. That's very, very kind. I was writing down these. Okay, verses 11,500 flipboards. 2,500, and then you have this is CC, and then here SB. It's of course 18,000, and then here 8,000 plus. So that gives an idea. Then you have the Adi, the Madhya, and the Antya. Here is 17 chapters, here is 25 chapters, and here is 20 chapters. Okay, just get an idea of what we're looking at.
What?
So I wrote this, we're studying. Then we're also studying, besides the CC itself, context. You understand a book through context. So we're looking at other biographies, we're looking at maybe some academic perceptions, other reference material. So outside the book itself, that I also considered as part of what we're doing. Okay, that was what? Okay, still have where and when. Where, when, and why. The rest is short. So I can do it quick. Maybe
Well, O'Connell, I guess you have heard of O'Connell.
I spoke of scholarship before, I spoke of Dimmock, Stewart, and Mannering. They are the Chicago School of Scholarship. And O'Connell is from Toronto. Of course, O'Connell has left this world last year. O'Connell was appreciated by Prabhupada. He met Prabhupada, Prabhupada liked him. And O'Connell said a lot of favorable things, actually. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita is known as hagiography. You are aware of the term, I suppose. Hagiography means the biography of saintly persons. And it is generally considered that such biography is colored by mythology. You know, like when they write that some stories that make it, that's not exactly accurate, but the tendency is to color it. And so it's counted amongst hagiography, and many scholars have attacked it, you know, as like being not factual and so on. But O'Connell did a good job. He said, yes, but there are different kinds of hagiography. There is hagiography, biography of saintly people, which is manipulated, which is full of ulterior political motives, which is therefore not reliable. And then there is hagiography with integrity. Yeah. And Assisi is obviously in that category. Yeah. So that's important, the integrity of the Assisi also. Yeah.
So O'Connell stood up for that. O'Connell wrote, analyzed the movement, and he wrote an article about the institutionalization of the movement, how it began to take an institutional form. And it's interesting because in the beginning there was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after sannyas going around South India, and he's like an ecstatic sannyasi. But he has no temples. He has no books, and he doesn't initiate. So there's no structure, nothing around him. And so there's no movement forming. You know, you look in South India, and one explanation why maybe in South India there is not so many remnants of Chaitanya. One explanation could be the lack of these things. So, no books, no institution, no disciples. Then, O'Connell points out that the movement is starting in three places, right? In West, in East Bengal, and the hub is, of course, Navadvip. Hub is Navadvip. And then, of course, Vrindavan. And Puri. Oh, he said large. And okay, and then South India. That's the, I'm adding that. Connell doesn't describe that. So that's weird. So that's useful, you know, to focus on these places. And it's like, yeah, you know, this little line here between West and East is more than a line, right? That's like a hard border with soldiers with guns, you know, and with like a totally different world now, you know. Like you go to East Bengal
And the rickshaws make no noise. There is auto rickshaws, they're completely silent because they're electric. It's like shocking. You come from India, you know. Right? And all that, and then this thing in here, but what's going on here? So Bangladesh is another experience altogether. It's a different world. But our history is on either side of the border. And there are many, many places in Bangladesh that are our places. Yeah. Stop at 5 o'clock for a 10-minute break as well.
So that's like many
the birthplace of Vaitracharya. Sitting right on the edge of the Goda area, in the most external periphery, is a river. And on that riverbank somewhere, no one knows exactly which spot, but in a radius of about 20 kilometers we know. And ISKCON is also there in those 20 kilometers with the temple. But there is the birth site of Chaitanya, of Advaita Acharya. And right behind it start the Meghalaya hills. Right? And then it's no longer Vedic culture. Then it's becoming like tribal and, you know, snake eating. And the Meghalaya tribes are... According to Britannica, when a man gets married, you might like this detail about the Meghalaya tribe. When a man gets married, he must be prepared in the case his father-in-law dies, then he has to marry his mother-in-law also. That's a sensitive point. I knew you would say it. Encyclopedia Britannica. So whatever that is, it's definitely not Vedic. that's for sure. And for the rest, I have no comments, but it's not Vedic. That's very, very, very sure. So anyway, it's interesting because Advaita Acharya is none other than Mahavishnu, who is also right on the edge of the spiritual world, you know. And after him begins the material world. And he just appears there right on the edge. It brings memories like that. Such a place. Anyway, many personalities appeared in East Bengal. Haridas Thakur, Rupa Sanatan, the whole history of Rupa Sanatan is there. And yeah, the life of Rupa Sanatan is just happening on the border of East and West Bengal. And a portion is on the eastern side and a portion is on the western side. It's just the river, the Patna River. And on either bank, their appearance is in the east and Ramakeli is in the west. In the year 1204, the Turkish soldiers conquered Nadia. They conquered Nadia in 1204. By tricks, actually. The king Lakshman Sena was extremely powerful, but the Turkish leaders disguised themselves as horse salesmen and came in bringing a large group of horses and had like a little commando party like that. So, and in that way, from within, right, then they attacked the big army from outside and they won. Basically it means they were not fighting according to Kshatriya codes. See, they defeated them because Lakshman Singh was fighting by standards of Kshatriya. So, you know, he's waiting to be challenged, right? A king would come in this way, right? It's like, what kind of king is he?
Even when Krishna and Bhima, right, went to meet Jarasandha in disguise, okay, they challenged him for a duel, right? Like they gave it like a fair chance. So the Muslims didn't follow these principles of Dharma. That's how Nadia was lost. And then, because Nadia was the seat of the government in 1204, but there was another capital of the same Sena family, which was a little more up north, in the district of Malda, and that is where the capital then came, Goda. That's where Nawab Hussein Shah was, and next to that is Ramakeli, where Rupa and Samantha is. Anyway, I am giving you this little bird flight now. So let's have a breather.
Mark, you know the first year they had an exam today, 3-hour exam.
Okay, so you want to stop?
So maybe it's better that we have 3 hours, and she also had a deadline, and we also had another class today. So maybe today we can have 2 hours, and every other day we
okay.
can have normal.
It's fine, honey. But but I do need a bit of a structured environment, like no projector is bad.
No, I'm not leading this, I'm just saying because they're shy.
Who is
a secretary from the bottom of the college.
I had a
story. It's not very much.
Okay, we're not.
Anyway, you will have a projector tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll have, because I had a wrong. Janoshni Prabhu was not here, and today I checked, will everything be set, and they told me, no problem, Janoshni Prabhu, he's not here, he asked somebody else, and it's in here.
Yeah.
No, it's no problem. I think I'm not on any worst case, but I'm just saying it's like, without it, you know, it's I'm going to round it off then.
Yeah?
I won't let you go.
That's why I was saying.
See, today I'm ad hocing anyway because of the no projector, my original plan strategy. Went out of the window and I'm just doing an ad hoc because what I'm writing it down on the board is I could have done probably in half an hour if it had a PowerPoint. It goes a lot faster. All this writing is a slow business. Then. I just wanted to write why. Here, before I let you go then, what we did, when, okay, it's short now, but I just want to finish this, you know, don't mind, when, the period, right, that we are looking at is 1433, because that's Advaita Acharya's appearance, so that's the earliest personality in the book, that's the earliest, so we say. We're looking at his life, and we're looking at 1615 for the completion of the CC. So this is like really the period that we are covering. And then of course, okay, I will also say a few things about later acharyas, how they carried on. But that's not like part of the actual subject matter, that's the context, you know what I mean? But this is sort of what is being covered. And then finally, on why, write it here. Well, why I like to borrow Tony Stewart's phrase, the final word. Why was the CC written? The final word. It was the final word which reunited all the divided Vaishnavas, because they were so divided after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So much wild growth. You know, because nothing was centralized. Not only was the movement not centralized, Bengal was not centralized, the government of Bengal was not centralized. It was basically, you know, a handful of Muslims with a powerful
mercenary army who were who had defeated some of the big Indian kings. So, all right, they were there, but they couldn't govern the place. So they turned it over to the Hindus, who were just zamindars, and they would just run, everyone runs his own area everywhere. So the Hindu culture was just undisturbed, going on, practically no Muslim culture. And and for a long time, no common vision, no common leadership, very splintered in small areas, small ideas. As the leader was thinking, you know, you had to also think that was more or less. So Bengal was very divided. There were lots of Sufis also active in Bengal, right? And the Sufis, they were more the spiritual personalities who were preachers. Lots of Sufis came to India. They liked India. And the Sufis are interesting personalities. We will talk about them. There was even dervish practices mixing in with Vaishnavism. So you got all these upper sampradayas. So the final word, the CC was getting rid of all the upper sampradayas. That was for the outside world. And the Vaishnavas, they wanted the CC for the final pastimes. And that then I'll save tomorrow. What can we do? The best for last.